You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
It's Tuesday once again on the Liberty Ballers Podcast Network. It is the Out of Sight Podcast. I'm your host, Adil Royster. Chill Ride, Chill Vibes as always. It's not chill in the city of Philadelphia, where we've had it was an insane amount of heat and humidity last week, and the temperature still says like 80-85, but the humidity is just, it's just, I can't anymore. Like, can it be October already? Got the NBA finals going on, and also I got Dave Early joining me. We're going to talk a little Daryl Morey, Doc Rivers, with a piece that he did last week. So we're going to get into all that. But first, Dave, how are you handling the heat the last couple of weeks?
We had some heat advisory warnings here in New York City also.
Don't you just love those?
You know, the better part of it, you know, not that I wouldn't switch in a heartbeat, but I haven't had to go, like, I would always take the subway to work.
Jesus.
And that, you know, when you get down there, it's like 114 degrees. So if you have to wear a dress shirt, it's now completely stuck to your back. And that's, now I'm working from home more because of all this. So I at least avoid the subway in the middle of August or July.
You know, come on, New York. It's bad enough that the train system in your city is like, it's not always on time. It's actually, last time I was up there, it was more late than anything. But come on, you're making all that money, you can afford air conditioning in the tunnels. Like, come on.
You know what?
Like,
you can't air condition just for the Ninja Turtles, because then we'd be on some like fossil fuel.
That is true.
Handmaiden's Tale.
Well played. NBA finals are going on. How have you been enjoying the series so far, with Milwaukee being up 3-2?
Well, it's really hard not to enjoy this series. I was disappointed because I have this pet theory. I don't know exactly the moment it happened, but I think it was the first quarter in game four. I couldn't stop staring at the way Chris Paul was moving. I know he's got like ligaments in his right hand. I know Pat Beverly low-bridged him and he sprained his left wrist.
Oh, yeah.
But he was well on his way. You remember games one and two? All the narrative was he's finally headed for a finals MVP. He's going to put the John Elway on his career.
Right.
And now it's like he's not moving right. And I know that people will say, well, they switched Drew on to him. And that's true. And Drew's sensational two-way player. But he doesn't look right to me. And I think, I don't know if we're going to hear he's got a hamstring or something. But that's been disappointing, because now they have to play almost exclusively through Booker as an isolation player. And he's been red hot, but it's not the type of winning basketball that makes you feel really good. It's not like when they're getting those easy buckets to Ayton and working it around the Bridges, and then Booker gets going and it's over.
I think the switch from to Holiday has been incredibly beneficial for Milwaukee, because, you know, Holiday is bigger and he's stronger and younger than Chris Paul, so like, he's out there giving Chris the business. And I don't know if Chris Paul is up to that for at least game six. If they win game six and they go back to Phoenix, there's no way I'm betting on Phoenix in game seven.
You wouldn't bet on Phoenix at home in game seven?
Absolutely not. Not with the way that Chris Paul has looked the last two games. Like, I agree with you. Something's not right.
But that makes me think that they could get smoked in game six. But if somehow I'm surprised and they pulled it out, then I would have to fully reassess.
And I say this to everybody that comes on the podcast last couple of weeks. I'll take my winning bets now because I called Milwaukee at the beginning of the season. I called them after the Harden trade. I called them before the playoffs started. And I said Bucks in six when this whole thing started. So, Dave, you can Venmo me. You can cash at me. That's fine. I'll give you all my tags.
All right, but I'm going to put in this big fat. You know how Venmo tells you what is this for? instead of saying you were right, I'm going to say, but they only barely beat the Nets without Harden and Kyrie.
So okay.
In theory, the Nets were the best team.
A winning bet is still a winning bet. It's still cash in my pocket.
I'm still Venmoing you this hypothetical bet we never made.
All right, fine. Okay, let's get into your piece. You discussed the relationship between Doc Rivers and Daryl Morey, and I thought the piece was going to go one way, and it was not what I was expecting.
What did you expect?
I thought it was something along the lines of like they're not getting along, and like there was stuff like that, but not necessarily. But I'm going to ask this question anyway. Based on what you were writing and all the research that you did, is there kind of a rift, kind of a separation between the kind of team that Daryl wants to build and the kind of team that Doc wants to coach?
I mean, you have to do a lot of tea leaf reading to come up with a rift. My guess is there's not technically a rift, but if I'm Daryl Morey and I've had as much success as he had, and remember, he was down by 18 points heading into the fourth quarter with a less talented team and beat Doc Rivers' Clippers, like peak Chris Paul, peak Blake Griffin.
That's correct.
Peak J.J. Redick, and he did it with Josh, what's his face, who's still getting stretch provision. But so, you know,
Josh Smith, much like Bobby Pena, they just keep collecting those checks.
He's still getting those checks. And he did it because he understood that it, you know, like a poker player knows, if you're wildly outmatched, you increase your randomness, you increase your variance.
Right.
Chuck a pile of threes. And he's a really, really creative guy. And so when you hear him speak publicly and say, I like having Dwight Howard because we want all the tools, but what I want to see or is what Doc can do is some Simmons-centric lineups when Joel Embiid sits with shooters, you think, okay, good. And we're talking back in November 2020. Okay, good. We're finally going to see a team who knows how to utilize Simmons. You have to spread the floor for him and give him the ball and let him clear out for him and run some pick and rolls where he can dive bomb against the rim, almost simulating his transition runs. And we got the opposite. We got like 400 minutes of him with Dwight, which we knew,
oh my God,
5 years ago wasn't going to work. And
hell, we knew that when both of those players were being conceived by their parents. Like, we can just look back and just like, hey, if these two are ever on the court together, it's not going to be a great fit.
When I saw Iverson step over Ty Lue, I thought to myself, Ben Simmons and Dwight Howard's never going to work.
Exactly. That is the moment that it materialized in my brain.
So it almost feels like they violated a Bible of what to do with Ben Simmons. Thou shalt spread the floor.
Ooh,
thou
nice.
Thou shalt stagger his minutes with Joel because they are not the perfect fit. Let's be honest. So we know that Joel deserves some lineups with lots of shooters and Ben isn't one. So, and we know that he can carry almost any lineup. So you can get Shake his burn. You could get Korkmaz his burn and Joel will keep them afloat. And then we know that Ben usually plays his best when Joel's not in the game. And so why not do a little bit to get the best out of Ben? It was almost like they violated every single Ben principle this season.
That's actually something that you brought up in your piece, the blatant lack of experimentation, especially in those like beginning months of the season, like you said, November, December, so on and so forth. And even when, you know, Joel was hurt, we were all just kind of hoping for some of these like Simmons at the five and four shooters lineups, but it just didn't happen. Is that like Doc being stubborn? Like, I don't know what that was.
I think it was hyper conservatism. I think the way I quoted Derek Bodner and Rich Hoffman that, you know, they talked all year. They were like, I do feel concerned that he's going to go back to the idea of a traditional big, the guy who can theoretically clog up the paint, because that's how Doc feels most comfortable. And even with Daryl reminding us in November and then again in March that he doesn't have to only do that, that's essentially the way he was going to play it. And by the time it was like tax day, we knew that that's how it was going to run in the playoffs.
And they didn't even, you know, experiment like 5-10 minutes in a game at any point, really, that I can recall. And like I was saying, especially with Embiid hurt, you had the idea, you had the time to check and see how these lineups would work, how they would be beneficial. And it just didn't happen. Just to have another little thing in that Swiss Army knife, and just Doc never did it.
There was a Doc, there was a Daryl Morey quote from Kai Klarlund and Sixers Wire, where when they acquired George Hill, he said, now you can do some lineups that can essentially switch because everyone's a two-way player. And he didn't see where everyone has playoff experience. He didn't say it, but what he meant was, and remember late March, Seth Curry was still feeling maybe the effects of COVID.
Yeah.
He wasn't playing that well. Certainly not as scorching hot as he was by playoff time. So you knew what he was saying. They could run out some lineups with George Hill, Ben Simmons, Tobias Harris, and help me out.
Danny Green, whoever.
But they only played together like 13 possessions total. And I guess the first thing Doc Rivers would say was, you know, we were ramping up George. He didn't have a ton of time. But by the end of the season, do you remember? Like, it was like dominoes. Whoever the Sixers played, all their stars were not going to play.
Right.
And so there was a lot of games they could have really started ramping up their, okay, this is what we might do come the second round. And they didn't do it. They did a lot of the starting lineup and then a lot of all bench. They did a lot of lineups with Dwight where you thought, okay, if you end up playing Atlanta and they're exposing him, what else are you going to do? But we were actually thinking beyond that. If you're going to play the Nets and they run five out and Blake Griffin's behind the three-point line, or Milwaukee and he has to go chase Brooke Lopez from three, what's going to happen? You need something else. They never learned what that something else was. Turns out Atlanta exposed them on it.
Can we take a second and just acknowledge the epic failure and the, I don't know what the heck that was, decision to run to, first of all, Tobias and an all bench lineup, or like Simmons Dwight Howard matchups? Can we just take a moment and just kind of reminisce and just wonder what the hell was Doc Rivers thinking?
So I mean, this one speaks directly to some of our friends at Liberty Ballers. Like, we have smart people on our site who pointed out that some of these lineups had like a +7 differential. I think at one point Jackson Frank tweeted out like a Tobias Harris and four bench units has a positive something something, and they should be a part of the playoff rotation. And I think Steve Lippman pointed out a very specific five player lineup that worked as well. And it looked like, you know, Dwight Howard is good rim protector. This is the way to play it. And I think that's how they looked at it. I think that's how Doc Rivers looked at it. And I think it was fair to also look at those splits. Like, they were like a 15th percentile offensive team.
Right. They're real
99th percentile defensive team. And it was like, I didn't trust it. You didn't trust it. Derek Bonner and Rick Hoffman didn't trust it. Ben Dietrich didn't trust it. A lot of people said, I mean, look at the Bucks. When Giannis sits, where are Middleton and Drew? Do you have like a 65-minute sample where Embiid and Ben are both on the bench like the Sixers had? That's more than a full game's worth against the Hawks.
Yeah.
That the two best players on the team were sitting. And you got outscored in those minutes in a series you barely lost. And so, you know, you look at Devin Booker, Chris Paul, they're both in the game pretty much the entire – one of them is in the game the entire game. And then you look at the way the Bucks do it. The Sixers are closer to the Bucks, and they have a quote-unquote big three, right?
Right.
So Joel sits, have the other two out there. And then if Dwight doesn't work, don't play him.
And this is what I would always say when I saw those all bench lineups. I would just think, listen, if I put my coaching hat on, I'm the coach of the Philadelphia 76ers. May God have mercy on all of your souls. Sure, Embiid, Simmons to start the game, but you know Embiid's going to run out of gas like towards the fourth quarter, which mm-hmm. is fine. So take him out after like 7 minutes and then have Simmons run out there with Harris and three shooters and let that run for the end of the first quarter, a little bit at the beginning of the second quarter. And then it becomes JoJo's turn to run a similar style offense with whoever, Mike Scott at the four.
Then bench Ben and then bring JoJo back and play through Joe.
Exactly. Like that, that made so much sense to me. I don't know why that wasn't really even an option. And then bring JoJo and Ben back in come closing time.
It was this, you know, I called it like a zany butterfly effect. It was like, okay, Dwight's the only big that I feel comfortable using. Okay, I learned halfway through the year that he doesn't work with Ben. Now I have two choices, 4-5 bench guys or Tobias and bench guys. And I'm going to go with a little of both.
Yeah.
All bench got smoked. And then the Tobias and bench guys didn't get absolutely demolished, but they were still a minus 14 in the series. They lost by 17 total in 4 games. So you want those points back.
You know what? Listen, I want those points back. I want game one back. Okay. Because the assignment of Danny Green on Trae Young to start game, that cost us game one, literally cost us game one.
Yeah. Yeah. To Doc's credit, and maybe this will frustrate you, but he didn't go back to it the rest of the series. I mean, he couldn't. Danny Green got hurt, but it seemed like he wasn't going to.
You're arguing semantics there, Dave.
Danny Green got hurt in game 3. I don't think he was going to do it again, but it shouldn't have. Like, I would have been terrified to try it in the first place. So after halfway through the first quarter, I would have said, all right, this isn't working.
And, like, you commented how Danny Green was on Westbrook to start the series against Washington, which is fine. Listen, if Russ wants to chuck up all those threes where he shoots less than 30%, you go right on ahead, Russ. You take all the threes and those little elbow jumpers that you want to take. You know what? We'll set up a nice little we'll set up a nice little area for all these bricks that you're throwing up. And yeah, we'll build houses here in Philadelphia and Washington, D.C.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we saw like that worked. And then I get the fear, like, okay, Beal is not like Trae Young. Trae Young is absolutely ruthless. I think we talked on a podcast about like his dirty tricks.
So yeah,
you didn't want him to foul up, Ben. I get the fear.
But that being the case, you have to just go to Ben and just be able to trust him that he'll be able to play defense without fouling out.
Yeah. Derek Bonner talked about that on his podcast. He said, like, Ben doesn't get tired. You don't have to worry about energy. I heard you talk about energy. Ben usually is pretty good at staying out of foul trouble. And he was, with the exception of, I think, game 6, pretty much out of foul trouble. And Tyrese Maxey saved them in that game anyway.
Even when Ben has 5 fouls, he's still out there competing. And, like, he's got the veteran defensive moves already where it's just, like, he knows where he can put his body and his hands and things like that so that he doesn't pick up those cheap fouls. And I feel like by game 2 or 3, he kind of had Trae Young's tricks down to a science and kind of knew how to avoid getting into foul trouble.
Yeah, and this is – I didn't talk about this in the piece, but this speaks to the central theme of, you know, Daryl Morey knows probably, like, much more analytics than we do about how a coach fearing foul trouble is often worse than the foul trouble itself. Like, I take you out and I sit you for, like, 10 straight minutes. Meanwhile, you never pick up another foul the rest of the game.
Right.
How many minutes did I cost you total? And – we also know refs swallow the whistle when a star gets his 5th foul. You saw Devin Booker take foul on Middleton and they didn't even call it
mm-hmm. a couple
games ago. So
Devin Booker is out. Devin Booker was out there holding people in game 5. I'm just like, yo, whistles? Yeah, really? Come on.
The refs don't want to give a guy his last foul and then be the story, you know? So I think that you want the front office to step in there and say, look, worry too much about foul trouble in that scenario, because the numbers show it's better to roll the dice and let the guy foul out.
So Doc Rivers was an ownership hire. Doc was first, and they brought in Maury later.
Yeah.
Let's flip that a little bit. With your best educated guess, between knowing how Daryl is and what kind of teams he likes to build, and just kind of seeing what he has and just filling the bench out, is there a name that probably Daryl would have preferred? Is the right word, I guess, maybe.
So he,
because I can't say he was really in love with Doc Rivers. I can't really say that definitively.
He interviewed him when he was with Houston for the Houston job.
Correct.
But you don't know how that went, because you suspect Daryl might have even let him know, like, I'm out of here. This is for their next coach, but I might not even be here. Who knows what conversations those were. And we have heard him say on podcasts stuff like, I would rather work with a coach who players love playing for than one who's like an excellent tactician, because it's all about obtaining and keeping your stars and keeping them happy.
Right.
So I think he was more than content. Like, I don't think he would have taken the job if he couldn't work with Doc or was devastated with Doc. I think he was very much excited about the opportunity.
That's a good point.
If I had to guess, though, based on his comments and based on like how predictable it wound up feeling, like things that the Sixers were doomed by were coming. Like, you know, we started worrying about these things that ended up dooming them in January. I would guess that he's maybe surprised at how, what's the right word? How confident Doc was, and maybe not as open to input from the front office. That was a criticism of Danny Ainge when they parted ways of Doc. And that was a criticism reportedly of the Clippers, that they didn't think Doc took enough
input from the front office.
Correct. And, you know, it became a famous thing that he wasn't adjusting even after everyone was sharing those splits, that Montrezl Harrell was getting roasted and Zubac was doing better against Jokic.
And listen, I like Doc Rivers. I think he's a great coach. I hope that he comes in next year and is more amenable to suggestion. I'm not saying that Daryl Morey take like the Jerry Jones route or the Mark Cuban route and he's just like sitting there on the bench or something like that. But yeah, I do kind of agree that with the team that he assembled and all of the expectations for this team, like, there was no way Daryl Morey was going to go out there and give, you know, Becky Hammon like her first job, even though, damn it, okay, someone hire Becky Hammon, for Christ's sake. Okay, I'm sick and tired of saying this every year. He wasn't
she's,
gonna
she's been working under Pop, and then she sees you going and bringing Chauncey, who's never coached, right?
Oh,
she's
my gotta God.
Be frustrated with that.
Don't even get me started.
And she's
Chauncey
like,
Billich.
And now maybe Lillard wants to leave because of off the court stuff and his past. Like,
all right, maybe she dodged that bullet. She probably dodged that bullet then.
True.
But it wasn't going to be Becky Hammond. Like, I get the intrigue behind Dawn Staley, but that wasn't going to happen either. I'm on record saying that I was kind of a D'Antoni guy, even though it kind of made no sense with Joel Embiid on the roster. But are you hopeful that Doc will be like more compatible to input from the front office, or is he at that point where it's just like, oh no, this is me and this is how I coach, like that's it?
Yeah, I'm not optimistic at all that he's going to have this
come to Jesus moment,
because you know why he was fired, according to The Athletic? What was the guy's name? Judon Buva, I think.
Hit me. Give me the details.
But basically, it was Ballmer was still open to keeping him. He wanted to hear Doc's explanation for why things went wrong. And Doc, one, defended his usage of Montrezl Harrell.
Oh, my God.
And two, you know, he had this monster chemistry blow up with them. And maybe none of it was his fault. Maybe it was pandemic related. Who knows? But then he also said, like, we needed more of a traditional point guard. And I think it was the lack of accountability that made them say, you know what, I'd like a change. And so I wonder if I'm Daryl Morey and I'm listening to Doc Rivers and I have that exit meeting, what does Doc say? Does he say I screwed up X, Y, and Z and it kills me and it's going to kill me for the rest of my career because we'll never have an easier path? Or does he defend himself and say, had Ben not done X, Y, and Z, we would have cakewalked? And if I'm Daryl Morey, I'm listening extremely carefully to his explanation for what didn't work out. Because this is a team who we, when we fired Brett Brown, we were saying accountability and adjustments.
Yeah.
And those are the two things that have cost Doc Rivers terribly over the last, you know, handful of years. That's why he, and getting out of the second round. And that was a big problem for him also. So all of the things that were weaknesses with the Sixers, you could take this back to backup center minutes with Greg Monroe in 2019, not enough experimentation. Why do they keep playing Boban? He's not going to be able to use in the playoffs. You know, it just feels like we're on rinse repeat mode here. And it feels like Doc's on rinse repeat mode from other stops he's had.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And even if Daryl didn't like his answer and he just said, okay, you know, it's been a year. Here's a lump sum for the rest of your contract. We're moving on. I feel like it's already too late because I feel like the best candidate to replace Doc is currently in Indiana. And that sucks.
That would have been exciting if they got Rick Carlisle. Not because I think Doc's a terrible coach. I think Doc's
not a terrible coach.
No, it's just really hard for me to, like, even if they were to go get Dame Lillard now, if you were to make it to the conference finals, would you have confidence that Doc Rivers is the best coach for that job? And based on the last 10 years of his career, I don't have an easy time saying yes, he is.
I don't think so either. And you know what? We've seen these teams get thrown together and pieced together with, like, duct tape and bubble gum amidst all of the superstardom, and it just not working out. And I don't know if, because listen, the Clippers had Paul George and Kawhi Leonard on the same team, and Doc couldn't get that team out of the damn second round of the playoffs.
Ty Lue had him one game away from the finals without Kawhi, right? Like,
oh my God. Like, what do we, oh man. And you remember at the beginning of the season when Brett got fired and Ty Lue's name was getting thrown around. And my whole thing was, is Ty Lue a good coach, or did Ty Lue benefit from being able to coach LeBron all these years? Looking back, I'm thinking to myself,
he was the anti David Fizdale. Yes. He was legit. He was more like Spoelstra. You might have looked very you know, cross-eyed at Spoelstra. Is he really good? But now that LeBron's gone, you're like, oh yeah, he's real good.
He's good. I oh my God, I would give just about anything to, you know, get Spoelstra on the Philly bench, but that's just not gonna happen because Pat Riley hates me, and he won't allow that to happen.
there was that rumor that that Joel didn't want Lou, and maybe that had something to do with Lou sharing clutch with Ben, and who knows how Lou would, you know, whatever.
That's the other thing that I'm not quite a fan of in this new era of player entitled or player empowerment. Players are good players, but they're not always the best GMs, and they don't always make the best decisions.
Yeah. Yeah. Somewhere, like, you know, the Sixers are in a mess now. They're in a big fat mess. And if they don't like any trades and they decide they can't pull the trigger on these trades, maybe Embiid's restless. You know, he was criticizing Simmons passive aggressively after the series. Some of the fans would just be straight up outraged and boost it. Shoot it. Boo.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's somewhat, I think, their own doing, because I don't know that it would have been quite the same if they advanced, and who knows what would have happened with Bucks. Maybe the Bucks smoked them, maybe not. But it seems like it's more likely that the blame would be a little bit more evenly distributed if they had made it that next round.
Oh no, if it was Bucks Sixers in the ECFs, I would have said Sixers and seven in a heartbeat.
You're not alone. Some people would have picked them. Some people say like Bucks and five. I honestly don't know. I think I would have bet on the underdog either way.
Yeah.
Because I think you're betting on close.
You're betting on the underdog just so you can get that sweet plus odds. That's what you're doing, Gabe. I would just take the odds. You're a Sixers fan at heart, but in your head, you're like, you know what? If I bet the underdog, I'm going to make money. And I love my team, but I love money in my pocket a little bit more.
It mitigates my emotional devastation when the Sixers lose if I at least make $100.
Exactly. And that's
just a little bit.
I got to be totally honest. You know what? Full disclosure, I want some money on those Hawks games. It sucked.
Yeah.
It really sucked. But when I looked at my bank account, I was like, okay, doesn't hurt as much.
Yeah, I honestly did too, but it didn't hurt any less because I was making those bets in that Joel is too hurt to be an impact player. And when I saw that he wasn't, I really expected victory. And like, oh, I can't believe they lost that series, man. Right. 26-point lead, 18-point lead going into the fourth. And in that second half, Dwight Howard is a 3 minutes minus 11. And next thing you know, not that it's all in his fault, but it was some lineups that had just been getting spanked throughout the postseason. And it's like, next thing you know, we're in panic area.
Would Daryl have been completely justified in firing Doc Rivers just on those two games in that series alone? Because I feel like it might have been.
Oh, absolutely. Kyle Newbeck, Philly Voice, wrote a good piece. Doc Rivers deserves just as much scrutiny. He's just as much to blame as Ben Simmons. And Ben Simmons is very much to blame. And then you got...
Yeah, they're openly trying to trade Ben Simmons.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Doc is going to be back on the bench next year, much to the chagrin of some in this town.
Yeah, and there was another prominent... I think it might have been Rich Hoffman, but I don't want to misattribute this. Basically said he shit the bed.
sounds like something Rich would say.
And, you know, he said, I thought they would do a better job exploiting Trae Young. Shame on me for thinking they would, and shame on Doc for not actually doing it, which is a good quote I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah, shame on all of us for thinking that Doc would do something so with such common sense as, hey, Ben Simmons, the guy guarding him, is 6 feet shorter than him. Maybe I should do some stuff and put Ben in the post. Maybe I should try one of these Ben plus shooters lineups right now.
If he's your second best player, and he is, and he's playing so well against Washington, and now you're really relying on just Joel, I would have done a little bit to try to get him going. I know people hate the idea that you have to accommodate him because his lack of development. I get that. But at the same time, you want to win the series, and giving a pick-me-up, giving some confidence to a guy who might not have some at the moment, can work wonders. I mean, you see those clips of like Monty talking to Ayton, like, you're down because you set the bar high. Here's what you're going to do. With Ben, you could do that. You could say like, look, we're going to try to spread the floor, and I want you to just go post or Danilo. And if it's not there, I want you to kick it out to Seth and just see what he does. Like, I would have felt better if Ben and Doc were fighting a little bit. Like,
yeah,
One of them, like, call play for me, damn it. Or we just called a play for you and you didn't run it, damn it. Something.
Yeah, I just wanted Ben one time that series just point to the guy that's guarding him and be like, look at how small he is compared to me. Put me in the post and let me go to work. Okay. I'm getting sick of this. Put Shake out there, or George Hill or somebody, bring the ball up. I'll go work my magic in the paint, and we'll just get on my back. We're going to Milwaukee. Let's go.
Yeah. I think the feedback loop was the game plan didn't maximize Ben's unique weirdness, and Ben played the good soldier and just sort of fell into that. And then it cascaded, and eventually he didn't want the ball because he was going to get fouled.
Well, sadly, this is kind of a moot point because, like I said, Simmons is now openly on the trade market. And is he on the roster to start the season? Is he traded midseason? I asked Tom this. I'm asking you this now.
You know, it's always so difficult to picture a guy returning. Like, you know how awkward it might be. Like, the fans are going to groan the first free throw he misses.
Yep.
But if you would look back at these situations, the dude usually is in that game when the season opens up. Jimmy Butler was, James Harden was, can't remember if, no, Anthony Davis was not. But these things do tend to drag out longer than you might think when it feels untenable.
And I'm sorry, you guys, there is no perfect trade for Ben Simmons. It does not exist. There's a lot of hype around NBA general manager saying, oh, we're still really high on Simmons. We want him. Okay. Well, what are you throwing at us? And like I was telling Tom last week, the Warriors aren't throwing Steph Curry our way. I honestly don't think Lillard gets traded. I honestly don't. And when it happens, it's probably going to happen tomorrow because I just said that now. I am personally going through my Zach LaVine come to Jesus moment. That's the trade where I'm just going to think to myself, okay, I don't 100% love it, but I guess we didn't have to give up as much if we tried to trade for Lillard or Beal or something. I'm getting there, Zach LaVine. I'm getting there.
I don't think that they want to move him. I don't even know if he wants to come. I mean, that's all it would take. He is a pure sweat brethren. Joel Embiid, Jason Tatum, Bradley Beal, Zach LaVine. They all work out with Drew Hanlon. They're probably on some text message chains from the summer workouts. Joel probably is like, come on, dude, let's win a title. And he's probably like, yeah, but I'll get a Supermax here or whatever.
Right. Zach is trying to secure the bag. And I got to respect that, which is, that's totally fine. Zach, you want to secure the bag? That's fine.
Let me get this 5 years. And in two, I'll ask to join you or something like that.
Right. And I definitely don't want any part. Listen, I like the idea of hometown kid Kyle Lowry coming back, but not for Ben Simmons. No way.
No. The optics of you try to get Maxey at the deadline, and instead I waited 6 months and got Simmons, that would be devastating. I think the thing that fans who are not too outraged at Ben Simmons should think about is, like, if you were Daryl Morey, you'd have this big whiteboard with fat heads on it, and you'd have, like, okay, let's say I have to give Ben Simmons and Tyrese Maxey and, like, who knows, three picks and two swaps for Lillard or something like that. Is that my walk away point, or do I give 4 picks, 6 picks? And then you look at, well, can I do Danny Green and 1 pick and 1 second and Matisse for Lowry and add him to this core and then use 3 picks for someone else?
Yeah.
Is that better than just having Lillard? To have, you know, Tobias Harris, Kyle Lowry, Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, and someone else, and one of your young guys, maybe you can keep Maxey. I think that's how Daryl will probably look at it if he were just looking at it from ice cold blooded basketball and not factoring in chemistry or fan sentiment or what Ben wants.
Honestly, I like the idea of Kyle Lowry if they don't trade Ben Simmons. I think Lowry, Simmons, Embiid, Harris, I think that works. Mm-hmm. But giving up Simmons for Lowry, if it doesn't produce a championship, then you basically admit in the media that you got pantsed by Masai Ujiri, and I'm not trying to do that.
And then you'd, and then Joel Embiid would have to go and play them, and they already have his number. Imagine they add Ben to that.
Oh God, I can't.
Doubling him from all sides.
That would be worse than the four rim game seven. That would be a worse feeling.
But if they did have Lillard, you would have to, you would see them as like a conference finalist automatically. You'd think that, yes, that team, when healthy, is definitely going to be in the final four.
I'll say it right now. I don't think it's going to happen because I don't think Lillard gets traded. But Lillard, yeah, Harris, and Embiid, that's the favorite in the East, folks. I'm sorry, but it is.
Would you explore trading Harris in that scenario? Because you could use like a Covington for some extra defense if you're losing Ben.
That's not a bad idea, but you have to think about the kind of message that Portland is sending if they're trading Damian Lillard, right? Like if you're trading Damian Lillard, you're admitting that, yeah, this era of Portland basketball is over and we're restarting.
I didn't mean it had to be Covington. I meant just, would you generally shop Tobias for defensive help and perimeter shooting?
Maybe. Because, you know, Tobias is situationally good on defense. I don't think he has the quickness to guard some of the really faster wings out there. And he's definitely strong enough to body some of the fours. But if you're also giving up Thibault and possibly Maxey in a Lillard trade, there's no perimeter defense whatsoever on that team.
Yeah.
And I can't, that's something that I can't allow that.
Yeah. People say, like, if you keep Ben, you're going to have the same problems in the playoffs. If you keep Tobias, you're going to have the same problems in the playoffs. If he has an off game, he's going to hurt you. If he goes 8 for 24, it's going to be almost impossible to win that game because he's not making up for it on the defensive end.
Here's the thing. If you trade Simmons for Lillard and then you lose all of the other defensive pieces in the trade, you're going to be losing games for different reasons. You're going to be losing games because you can't stop people, as opposed to, hey, we're losing games because we don't score enough.
Daryl Morey, you might trust to go find some David Nwaba types to fit, yeah, in.
I love when you reference David Nwaba on this podcast. I gotta say, it's an epic job by you, Dave.
You know, you trust, like, one thing he's really good at is finding help on the margins, finding like Ben McLemore, disgrace from the NBA, and turning him into a very helpful guy.
Somehow Ben McLemore was a plus player when Daryl Morey traded for him. I don't know how the hell it happened, but it happened. Jesus.
Yeah. And when the Sixers had an empty roster spot that they ended up giving to Corey Brewer, once the drunken dribbler, Danwell House was available. Morey had to let him go for salary reasons and then got him back. And we could have really used him. We needed him and James Ennis.
And that's why, like, you know what? I'm going to reference another sort of disgraced Sacramento Kings player. I'm not against the possibility of Buddy Hield, but first, okay, of all, not for Simmons. Second of all, I feel like Buddy Hield is in that place where, like, I hate to say it because it's like a hackneyed catchphrase, but Buddy really needs to get out of Sacramento. He really does.
So that could be a Danny Green sign and trade. Be pretty clean. You'd have to kick them something. They'll make it worth their while.
That's fine.
Work. But Danny wouldn't want to do that.
Listen, Danny, you're getting paid. You're getting your bag. So just go to Sacramento right off in the sunset.
But he could get a bag from a contender too, couldn't he?
Well, listen, hey, Danny Green has how many titles? Danny Green has how many rings in his house? Does he really need another one?
He's chasing four, man. He wants to be Ori.
No, stop it. Nobody's ever going to be Ori. No, we're not allowing this to happen. Robert Ori is a once in a generation type player, and it cannot and should not be repeated ever again. Always fun talking to you, Dave. And man, I don't know how I feel about this whole Doc Rivers situation, but I don't know. I'm hopeful he'll have this like moment of clarity where he's just thinking to himself, wow, I screwed that up royal last year. Let me try some of these alternative lineups that people keep bugging me about.
If you're Morey, you can't give him a guy that can't be used in any scenario. Like, you can't give him Dwight Howard, because if there's a situation or a team where Dwight Howard is unplayable, he might be out there a lot. So you just can't have anyone. You have to be perfect. You have to have a perfect roster if Doc's going to coach like he did in 2021.
Daryl Morey needs to come out like Billy Bean in the Moneyball movie, where it's like, listen, I traded Dwight Howard. You got to play somebody else. You got to play anybody else.
Yeah. I want you to have no shortstop. I want you to shift the entire, do things you've never done before.
And I want Hatterberg at first.
Yeah. We're gonna go big for Euclid.
First and only Moneyball reference on this podcast. I swear that's the only time it's gonna come up. Dave, why don't you tell everybody where they can find your talented writings and musings and podcastings, if you do that as well.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at David Early, DavidEarly. I write for Liberty Ballers. And I have a podcast called No Particular Hurry.
Dave Early, always a pleasure having you on, my friend. I will talk to you soon. It always goes without saying, every year around this time, should be a fun offseason.
I hope so.
or at least an uplifting one. We'll see.
Do you think they're going to use their draft pick?
That's a whole nother discussion. I don't have the brain power for that right now. I will save
Stay
that.
Cool, for, man. Stay
I'll,
cool.
I'll save that thought for our draft roundtable.
Yes.
But I'll talk to you soon. Stay cool. And New York subways. Get some air conditioning down there. Jesus Christ.
All right.
I'll talk to you soon, Dave.
Later.
Support for this show comes from Fundrise. Buy low, sell high. It's easy to say, hard to do. For example, high interest rates are crushing the real estate market right now. Demand is dropping and prices are falling, even for many of the best assets. It's no wonder the Fundrise Flagship Fund plans to go on a buying spree, expanding its $1 billion real estate portfolio over the next few months. You can add the Fundrise Flagship Fund to your portfolio in just minutes and with as little as $10 by visiting fundrise.com/fox. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the Fundrise Flagship Fund before investing. This and other information can be found in the fund's prospectus at fundrise.com/flagship. This is a paid advertisement.